This guy's alma mater is in the national championship game, a game you can hear on The Fan a week from yesterday in 6 days. He is Booger McFarland from ABC and ESPN joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. You're a Louisiana guy, Booker, and talk about what it's going to mean, because we talked about the possibility of not only LSU, your alma mater, winning the national title, but winning it in New Orleans. They may just go in full uniform and full coaching staff uniform, whatever you want to call it, just celebrating right out of the stadium after the game ends.
Yeah. that might happen. But it's going to be a hell of a task to beat Clemson before you get to that point. And I think, you know, if LSU is concerned about all the things that you mentioned, then they're going to get beat. Because the last time we were in this situation in 2011 against Alabama, it was 21-0. We lost. And so I think as close as LSU is to a national championship, an undefeated season in New Orleans, in front of the hometown fans, they first have to realize that the task at hand is a humongous task against a guy that's probably going to be the number one pick in 2021, Trevor Lawrence. A tailback in Travis Etienne that's probably got a chip on his shoulder because Les Miles didn't offer him. He went to Clemson. He's from literally about 45 minutes from the Superdome. So when you add all those things in, it's going to be a huge, huge task to get this job done.
Booger, I was on the sideline for the LSU game that they just won, and I made a comment when we did the postgame wrap-up. The only guys jumping up and down were the guys who didn't play. They were, you know, sort of mugging it to the LSU fans and waving towels. Everybody who played in that game, that was a business trip. I watched them walk out into the middle of the field, and this was not about confetti, and this was not about any of that stuff. I'm telling you, I felt the vibe that they came here, and this was business. If they have that attitude, the one that you could be nervous about, I don't think you have to be nervous about it. There was nothing that showed in them that they were there for all craps and giggles. They were there to do one thing, move to the next game.
Yeah, it's one of those things, man, where I think, you know, LSU's having a really, really magical season, so to speak. I don't necessarily believe in the whole magical thing. What I believe in is that they're executing and playing at a really, really high level. The quarterback has given everyone on the team a lot of belief that things that happened in the past, meaning the defense being really good and the offense not being able to score, that's not going to happen. And so I just think what you're seeing is the culmination of what a lot of people thought LSU should look like for a long time. Great athletes everywhere, the ability to score defensively. You know, they've always called us DBU. You got really good players on defense. I think the one thing that I'm waiting to see is I'm looking forward to seeing who on defense is going to make the play, quote unquote. Because I think in order to win this game, I think both offenses are going to score. Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Etienne, Allaire, all those wide receivers. Like, you probably got five first-round picks on offense on both sides. What defense or which defense is going to make a stop to allow the game to turn? To me, that's going to be the biggest key.
Booger McFarland with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. It is pretty amazing that Dabo Swinney has that chip on his shoulder, and he's got every right to. 93% of the betting money seems to be, as of right now, on LSU in this game. And you're talking about a team that is on the verge of becoming a dynasty should they win this one.
Yeah, you know, as far as Dabo is a phenomenal coach. I think that if you were to ask me, and you know, my son grows up and wants to play college football, and he can't go to LSU, I don't think there's a program in the country I would send him to or feel more comfortable sending him to than Clemson. That's just how I feel about Dabo, because I think Dabo not only coaches really, really good football, but I think he instills a lot in these kids as far as being young men. And to me, that's what college is all about. Like, I still talk to, like, if you go through my phone, there's probably 10 or 15 names of people I met while I was at LSU that I talk to, text with, communicate on a regular basis that were affiliated with LSU. And what does that tell you? Those people helped mold me, and I still keep in contact with them today because they're important to me. And I think Dabo runs the program and does things the right way. And again, if my son wants to play ball and he couldn't go to LSU, because obviously that's the first choice, I'd have no problem sending him to Clemson, South Carolina, and saying, Dabo, have at it, because that's how I feel about him, and that's how much I respect the job that he does.
Booger, I don't know. I'm assuming you were probably, because people would come to you when Orgeron, whether it was Tom Herman, what was your on-the-record take of Ed Orgeron, or at least that whole courting of other guys before Orgeron got the job?
I started from the get-go. I said, guys, it's time for us to make a move from Les. Nothing against Les, but I think the game has moved to a new level. And I want the guy that wants the job and not the money. I got a feel that Tom Herman wanted the money. Tom wanted the $6 or $7 million a year. I think his agent was Trace Armstrong, or is Trace Armstrong. They were trying to get the highest dollar value. And I just had a gut feeling they were trying to use LSU, and in the end, I was right. And so I wanted someone that wanted the job, because the guy that wants the job, he's going to give you every ounce of effort and energy in his body to do the job and do it at a high level and be successful. And that's what Coach O epitomizes, man. He's the guy who grew up dreaming, and one day, all of a sudden, his dream became a reality. And I don't know if you guys have ever been in that situation where you achieve a goal that many thought was unattainable, and you wake up every day, and all you think about, other than your family and the good Lord above, is doing that one thing. I think that's what Coach O does. He wakes up, he thinks about his family, he thinks about the good Lord, and then the third thing he thinks about all day, every day, is LSU football. And it shows day in and day out. And to me, that's why I thought he should get a shot at the job. Now, did I know that he was going to take LSU to the national championship this year? No, I didn't. Okay, that'd be preposterous for me to say. But what I did know is that nobody in the country, not Tom Herman, not Larry Fedora, not Urban Meyer, not anyone else, could give LSU a better chance from an effort, enthusiasm, and just giving everything they have to this program, more or better than Ed Orgeron. And I still believe that today.
Booger McFarland with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Let's talk some NFL. You got a chance to call the Texans and the Bills. Is there a more maddening quarterback out there than Josh Allen? Because sitting at home watching, he can do so many magnificent things and then do things that make you say, I don't think he was supposed to do that.
Well, first playoff game, he's got the weight of an entire organization on his shoulders. He's still young. And what I think we saw is a guy who kind of masked some of his flaws, he and Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, because for 2.5 quarters, he was phenomenal. I mean, he was absolutely outstanding. And then all of a sudden, you started to see some decisions that you're like, wait a minute. You know, the lateral, the couple of sacks he took, the kind of Hail Mary he threw up to the fullback. I'm like, yeah, those aren't plays that you want to make, especially in a situation where you have a chance to win. But if you gave me an opportunity to double down and buy more stock, Josh Allen stock, that is, I'd put all my chips on the table right now. I think the kid's going to be phenomenal. I think if Saturday was the floor, if Saturday was the worst Josh Allen you're going to get, I think people in Buffalo should really, really be overjoyed about what they saw, and also overjoyed about what's to come in the future.
Let me ask you about Deshaun Watson, because I know in this day and age, if you don't have a Super Bowl ring yet, people just say, well, I don't know about that guy, whether it's Mahomes. But I look at Watson, he's not 25 years old yet. We talk about guys who just smell and look like winners. That's what Deshaun Watson is. I don't know what that means to anybody, you know, who's kind of an NFL fan, but that guy is just, he permeates what it is you want out of a quarterback, I think.
He epitomizes what you want. Is he perfect? No, but I tell you what, there aren't but about maybe 3 or 4 guys that I take over him, and I'm just being honest with you. His will to win, how he does it, he's gotten better each and every year. And, you know, we were talking about Dabo Swinney earlier, and I just remember the comment that Dabo said, and everybody's like, oh, come on, get out of here. Dabo said the kid's Michael Jordan. And everyone, you know, thought that meant that the kid was going to win multiple championships and just be, you know, so much better than everyone else. I think what it meant is it meant more about his will, his playmaking ability, his clutch factor. And I think when you saw Deshaun the other day, he was at his best late third quarter, fourth quarter, and overtime. And that's when the great ones, you know, morph into something otherworldly. And I think overall he was phenomenal. And I think it wouldn't surprise me that if he goes on to win an MVP next year and gets Houston to a point where they can, because I don't think they're going to win it this year, but get Houston to a point where they can be right there on the cusp of a Super Bowl.
Booker, we talked about it. None of us in this business are batting 1,000. For some reason, whenever you make a mistake, it seems to get blown out of proportion. Does that bother you at all?
Not at all, man. You know, here's the thing about it. When you're in a business where you're in a high-profile position, people, you know, tend to try to accentuate the mistakes you make. And that's okay. I got no problem with that. I'm a big boy. You make a mistake, you own it, you move on from it. That's kind of what I do. I've always lived that way, and that's not going to change. And I think that, you know, for me overall, you know, I get bummed out when you do make a mistake. However, I'll often remind myself, no different than when I was a player. You know, you play 70 snaps, and, you know, it's the one snap that you miss that you often focus on. And then when the season's over, you go back and you look at the 1,000 plays you played, and you're like, you know what, man? I had a pretty damn good season. But how do you go about moving forward and getting better? You got to work on the things you missed, and then you try to even work on some of the things that you got correct. And I think overall, that's the way I look at it. But I'm a big boy, man. When I got into the opinion business, especially being in front of millions of people, I expect the criticism. I respect it. But as far as does it bother me, not at all.
Here's the analogy that we've used around here. And when you do 20-plus, 30-plus hours of live radio, whether it's a name, whether it's a date, whether it's whatever, and at a certain point you own it, you just say, my bad, and then you move on to it. But the analogy I've always used is if you go to a restaurant, you have a bad meal, you tell 50 people. If you have a good meal, you might tell 5. It's bad numbers. And in the world of social media, it's just bad numbers because nobody's really out to pat people on the back. I will say, I said the other day, one point that I think probably was not going to get emphasized that you made was when you talked about Houston, you said it was time for the guys that you pay big money to. Stars need to be stars on the defensive side. And boom, when it happened, I said, that guy just called it. There was something that you knew that, it, you know, the easy game is just, well, if they're going to get back in it. But you emphatically said they do not get in this game. They do not win this game unless the defensive stars, the guys you pay big money to. What was lost is that because people will find the, and whether it was the spike, the ball thing, whatever it is, people just want to jump on that. And that's the world of social media. So if you are a big boy, you get through that understanding, and that's just how it is.
Yeah, man, that's part of it, man. It's, you know, when you go back and obviously, you know, you guys realize this when you're on the radio, you can do 4 hours of great radio. But again, if you say one thing, it's the thing that people clamor to because, A, it can spread. Like, nobody spreads good news. I often go back and, you know, I don't watch the local news a lot anymore. But if you watch the local news never starts with the Salvation Army passing out turkeys. The local news always starts with, let's go down to Fifth Street where somebody shot 8 people. Now let's move on to the bank where somebody robbed the bank, because they want the things that are going to grab attention. They want to emphasize and accentuate those. And that's just kind of the world we live in, man. It's no big deal. It's part of it. You understand it. I go back and I look at the 17 games that I did this year on Monday Night Football as far as being the analyst. And I haven't done it yet. I've looked at most of them, but I think overall, when I do look at them, I'm going to be really, really proud of the work that I did and really, really happy with the progress we made in year one. And I look forward to the progress in year two and so on and so forth. So the future's bright, man. We had a tremendous game. It got great numbers. And I'll say the same thing to you guys that I'm sure someone told you one day, when you're in this business, you're always going to get criticized. You're always going to get patted on the back. You're probably as never bad as they say you are, and you're also probably as never good as they say you are. The key to it is when you find the reality in the middle to know what's real and what's not and what you have to work on and what you don't. And when you do that, then you'll have a long, long, successful career in whatever profession you choose. That's kind of what I did in pro football. that's kind of the way I'll attack my broadcasting career also.
Booger, we appreciate the time. What's the offseason like for you now? Do you have one?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, we get to call the Pro Bowl coming up here in a couple weeks. And then we're actually calling the Super Bowl for our international affiliates. And then after that, you just kind of take a break and then you're ready for free agency and the draft. And so the offseason really slows down, whereas you're working, you know, and traveling every weekend. Now you get several weeks off in between that. So that's kind of what's up on the docket, man. And hopefully soon I'll be in Atlanta when the weather breaks and I can get out there and tee it up at Peachtree a little bit.
All right. One more just real quick. How quickly were you aware that you have to drop the – these are guys that I played with, these are guys that I played against? I'm not talking about being savage, but the idea that I got to call them as I see them. There are guys who have a bigger problem with that than some other guys. And there were other guys, quite honestly, who were just looking to make TV and they crap on everybody.
Yeah, no, it didn't bother me. And quite frankly, my age gap between the guys that I cover now kind of helped me. And here's what I mean by that. I got out in 07. So there's probably a 10, 12, in some cases, 15-year age gap between the guys that are playing now. And so overall, that helps me because I think there's probably five, maybe six players that are still playing that played when I was playing. And so most of the guys that are playing now, I don't know personally or I didn't play with. I'm getting to know them. I'm a fan. I cover them. And so that wasn't as big a deal as, let's go back to last year with Jason coming in. And Jason played against everybody, so he has a great relationship. And so the ability to criticize people that you have a relationship with is a little different. And I think we all recognize that. But for me, I don't really have that kind of conflict because I've been out of the game so long.
All right, Booger, again, thanks for the time. Hopefully we could talk again in the offseason.
Anytime, man. Y'all have a great day, fellas.
Appreciate it.
You do the same. Booger McFarland with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line here on the Fan 680 and 93.7 FM.